I have a question for you this morning. When was the last time that you finished something you started? Keep it in your mind and maybe laugh about it. Okay, when was the last time you finished something that was kind of challenging? Got it in your mind? Okay, when was the last time that you finished something that when you first looked at, you were absolutely convinced that there was no way it was going to happen? Maybe a homework problem, maybe a project for class, maybe you had to give a speech, maybe you built something. Maybe you started a conversation with somebody brand new. Maybe you perfected a piece of music. Maybe you went after a job promotion that you knew you were just perfect for. Maybe you decided to organize your time, and that seemed absolutely impossible, and you did it. Maybe you're working on it. Maybe you applied to a school or some kind of vocation to work on a skill that you have or add a skill that you need. Well, last week, we started our series on decisions, good, better, best. Oftentimes, it's not a matter of having these polar opposite choices to make. Am I going to make this very bad choice or this very good choice? As we continue on through life, a lot of that kind of starts in about middle school, and as you get older, the decisions kind of move away from really, should I do this or should I do this? And they're really far apart. They kind of all start going one direction. And so, well, this is a good choice. Well, that's a better choice. That might be the best, but we have to decide which one that is, and it gets a little bit complicated and sometimes can be a little bit convoluted. So Andy started this series last week. He said that in the United States, we make, on average, 35,000 decisions every day. Every day. That's about 2,000 decisions every hour. And that's about one decision every 2 seconds. And that's our day. And that is considering 7 hours of sleep. So if you sleep less than 7 hours, you might be on the higher end of that. Yeah, every day. The majority of those decisions are subconscious decisions, so they're happening without methodical thinking. For example, when the alarm goes off in the morning, you don't methodically think about which direction to turn to hit the snooze button. I mean, to turn it off. And you don't think about which hand to push the button. And then you don't think about which direction you're going to move to sit up. And you don't think about which foot is going to go on the ground first. That all kind of just happens. Those are subconscious decisions that we make. We do make the choice whether or not to actually get up. And we do make the choice. I know it's hard to believe for those of us who like the snooze button and we can do it in our sleep. It is, we've made a decision maybe a long time ago to start hitting the snooze button and we're in a bad pattern, but it was at some point a conscious decision, which is a real bummer. But it is. And as you get up, then you just decide, am I going to brush my teeth first or am I going to have my cup of coffee first or am I going to have my cup of tea first? You don't think about which foot is going to go forward as you're headed to the coffee machine or if you decide you're putting on your shoes, you're getting dressed for the day. You don't think about the little decisions along the way. Those are subconscious decisions that we make. And a lot of those 35,000 that we make a day, a lot of them are subconscious decisions. Then you have those that are methodical, the ones that we're actually deciding what we're going to do about it. As a matter of fact, in 2008, there was a journal in Nature Neuroscience, talking about the brain. John Dylan Hayes had done a study. He wanted to know when decision-making actually happens because he was kind of looking at this subconscious and conscious decision-making. So they had 14 volunteers, and they had two buttons, one for each hand, and there were letters coming on the screen about every half a second. And then they had to click a button, and then they had to remember which letter that was showing on the screen when they clicked the button. During that time, of course, they were connected, and so they could see from an fMRI what was happening in the brain. And interesting enough, from an area called the frontopolar cortex, which is kind of right behind these frontal lobes. That's where the first activity took place in the brain. And that activity started highlighting 7 seconds before the decision was actually made. And the other thing about imaging is there's some delay, at least at the time there was. And so you could say up to about 10 seconds prior to the decision being made, activity was already starting. Pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. Our brains are pretty cool. Now imagine if we didn't have some of those decisions just happening real quickly. Can you imagine how long it would take us to actually get out of bed? I mean, most of us would spend the entire day in bed, and then night would come and we would start all over again. If we had to think which way am I going to move my foot, my fingers, you know, that sort of thing. And it really kind of highlights those people, let's say if somebody has Parkinson's or something like that, they actually have to think through more of those choices as they go along. Kind of an interesting fact. But we still have these decisions that are subconscious. We're very thankful because, yeah, we wouldn't get much done without it. It allows us and kind of frees our mind to then make decisions of consequence. We get to decide, kind of open up these other choices that have a little weightier, they're a little loftier, so that we have the ability to think through them carefully. The question is, are we? Are we being careful and thoughtful about the decisions that we're making? So how are you and how am I making decisions each and every day? What are the priorities that are driving our decisions? Last week, Andy spoke specifically about what's driving the decisions you make in your relationships. And we learned that the culture really demands a lot from us when it comes to our relationships. So take your phone, for example. Your phone is going to let you know if somebody has sent you a Snapchat or a message. Your phone is going to let you know if somebody's added something to their story. It's even going to let you know if they've reacted to something that you were tagged in. I mean, it's grabbing your attention at every cost, at every turn. So the culture demands that we are always, always available. As Andy spoke about last week, if we're not careful and we let the culture tell us what to do with our time, we end up burnt out, completely stretched way too thin. Our relationships end up suffering because we haven't prioritized which relationships we are going to spend the most time on and when and how. We've just kind of let ourselves get pulled each direction. So he talked to us about that last week and how important that was. We have to understand that this is vital to the health of our relationships. It's vital to our future. It's vital to our happiness and our feeling of fulfillment. And it's vital to the people around us. It affects all of those different things. God has a desire to bless us. He wants to bless you emotionally and physically. He wants to bless you spiritually. He wants to bless your finances. And of course, he wants to bless our relationships. Our part is that we put some boundaries on that. So today, our second installment of this series is looking at our decisions about how we're using our talents, the talents that we have. So before you roll your eyes at me and tell me that you're not good at anything, I ask you to hang with me for a few moments and see what we might discover about our potential that might be sitting right in our hand in front of us. So I want to pray this morning. I want to ask the Lord to highlight in each one of us a talent that may be sitting right in our hand that he wants to use, that we can use, that we can develop, and see what happens with it. Will you pray with me? Lord, we come before you and we're so thankful for the opportunity to be together. And God, I just break the lie that says I'm not good at anything or I'm not good at anything anymore. And I ask that your Holy Spirit would highlight in our heart a few things that we are absolutely good at and that you have a desire to grow us up, to develop in. We thank you for this. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, what do you have in your hand? Talent. Everybody has talent in their hand. Moses, in the Bible, he had a staff in his hand, and with the staff, he did many miracles. So he threw it down, it became a snake, he put it down, waters parted. He had a staff in his hand. David, he began with an instrument in his hand, and he had different things along the way, but he had an instrument in his hand. Farmers and builders have tools in their hands. Architects have mathematics and analysis in their hands. Accountants have data analysis working in their mind, how to balance things, how those things are supposed to fit. Mothers have grace in their hands. Dancers have finesse in their hands. Everybody has something in their hands right now. Everyone has a unique talent, and that is what sets us apart from one another. Now, we all have things that we enjoy, and this can be a little bit different here. So there are things that we like to do and we enjoy. We're not always good at them, though. So some people really enjoy playing golf, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to go professional about it and do that for a career, because when they go and step up and hit the ball and they want it to go right, it goes left, and then the next time they hit the ball, it goes left instead of right. And they may enjoy that, but it might not be something they pursue in the future. So mine, one of mine, is Ultimate Frisbee for Resonate played. So this generation of Resonate has not played Ultimate Frisbee yet, and mostly I just kind of took a break from it because of my skills. And so I really enjoy Ultimate Frisbee. So you have a Frisbee. You have goals at either end, not unlike football, and you have downs, essentially. So you have one team that's trying to make it past the goal over here, past the line, and score, and then you switch, same thing over here. The thing is, so you have it, you start it, the opposite team sends it flying, and you, if you're on offense, one of your team tries to catch it. As soon as you catch it, you have to stop where you're at. Your teammates can go running, though, and so then you can pass it to them. If they catch it, they can stop. The other team can try to grab it. And this really interesting thing happens whenever if I catch the Frisbee, when I go to throw it, I kind of chuck it because I don't really know the finesse of making it just glide. Yes. So we have this group, and we have some guys sometimes that are really competitive, and I totally appreciate that. I love it because I'm going to run hard. I'm going to have an absolute blast. But he was just like, he was not sure what was happening with me and this Frisbee. So I kind of took a break from it. So we'll have to play it. We'll have to play it. But I enjoy it. It's fun. I'm not overly gifted at this. I've never really figured out how to throw a Frisbee, but I enjoy it. So I'm not going to pursue anything real farther than that, but I am going to play it, and I'm going to have fun. So today, I want you to think about the things that you not just you enjoy and that are fun to do now again, but we really want to hone in on some things that you're good at, that it just kind of comes easier to you. Maybe you do it a little bit faster than someone else. Maybe it doesn't require as much. You find yourself done or it's, oh, yeah, got it. You know, whether that it's a lab or math or building something, you just find that it just kind of goes a little bit easier for you. So those are the things that I want us to think about. So if you you grab your paper. There are all kinds of things on here, and this is certainly not an exhaustive list, okay? There's little lines for you to add in what you're good at. I mean, if you're good at gardening, maybe you're really good on a bigger scale. Farming is in there. Graphic design is not on there. You could add that in there. You can kind of just expand on a few of those. Data analysis, maybe you're good at data analysis. So just don't be just limited to these. Look at them and kind of add one if you need to. One of the troubles that we come to in this regard and really accepting what we're good at is that our culture has a ranking system. So our culture decides what giftings are most valuable. which giftings are most appropriate or flashy. They need to be attention-getting. They need to earn lots of money. They need to set you apart from anybody else. And by apart, it doesn't just mean you're free to do what you're good at, but it means that you're in front of everyone else. So that can add a lot of difficulty depending on what you're good at. And it can discourage us from maybe going after the thing that we are good at. The interesting thing about that, though, is that depending on what kind of community you grew up in would decide what's important there. So if you grew up in an urban setting, what's flashy and what ranks highest would be different than if you grew up in a rural setting. Similarly, there's differences if you're male or female. There are differences on your stage of life, what ranks as the highest, what's the most important. But again, here's the culture, and it really impresses on us what we should be going after. And the thing is, for some of us, those things, we're really not going to be successful at those, or we're missing the intricate elements that we're actually really, really good at. And we end up deciding how things should work. So I should be good at sports. I should be good at gaming. I should be good at sewing. I should be good. And we go on and on and on, and we think about how this should work. I should graduate high school, and I should go to this college, and I should get this degree because, let's say, engineering, because engineering is where all the jobs are at right now, and it doesn't matter that I don't think I'm really going to enjoy that. This is where I need to be, and so I'm going to chase after that. And we get in our minds how things should work. Maybe you live in a group that says you need to have children. You need to be in this community, and as they get older, they need to help take care of you. They are part of what makes your life matter, and they owe you later in life. So whatever success they have, they should come back and they should pour into you. Maybe there's expectation that as you're older, as you've retired, maybe you should be in these certain community groups. Maybe you should sit on a board of directors. Maybe you should retire at this time with this level of planning done. And although those things are good, if we find that our life doesn't exactly meet up with that, instead of going, okay, what do I do, and make a plan for where our life is at, we go, this can't work, and we give up. We're allowing that culture. Sometimes we end up just immobilized or grumpy and unfulfilled and frustrated with ourselves. We feel that we have no value. And here's the other piece. As culture moves and changes, as you get older, as things happen, those standards, they're going to change. So what may have been flashy 10 years ago isn't now. And if you're busy chasing this idea rather than honing your skills, you're missing out on the opportunity. I'm missing out on the opportunity to really grow and develop and add to our community things that are uniquely ours. As we derive our idea of who we should be and what we should be from our culture and our community, we can end up feeling lost. And when those things change, when those expectations change, and they will, we end up feeling that we have no value and no place. That's a lie. That is a lie. What if you took these things that you're good at, coupled them together with your personality, your passions, your dreams? You practiced them, you developed them. And what if you were living your life in those places of strength? How might that impact your life and then impact the life around you? As followers of Christ, this is our command. We were told by Jesus to go into the world to make disciples. And little tidbit, when it says go into the world and make disciples, we are not all going to make preacher disciples. We're not all preachers. It doesn't say just to the pastors, go and make disciples. The audience for that scripture is actually everyone. Like everyone, everyone. Not just specific everyone's, but really everyone. Yeah, crazy, right? But we like to end up kind of thinking, well, then that means this certain thing and this is how it should work. But the truth is, teachers, they can make really good teachers. How many teachers go, I'm a teacher because of my teacher. This is what they did in my life. They finally cared about me. They noticed me. They challenged me. They wouldn't let me go. I didn't want to do it, but they stayed after me. Teachers make good teachers. General contractors train new site managers. Good moms can help you be a really good mom. Financial advisors, they can help you reach your financial goal. And doing what we're good at, suddenly we can make disciples. And it doesn't just stop at this ability. When we are followers of Christ, so much more comes with that. Because they see something different in our life, something we're good at, something that drives our passion. If we're not careful, we have what success looks like in our mind and we pass over. And if we don't reach it in the way that we think we should reach it, we give up. In John chapter 6, Jesus had just done, leading up until chapter 6, he had just done some signs already. And by sign, I mean miracles. And John is broken up into 7 miracles. He calls them signs. There's more that Jesus did, but that's how John wrote his gospel. And so we're in chapter 6, and we've already seen some things that Jesus has done. And Jesus is with his disciples, and he kind of leans over, and he's talking to them because he sees a crowd coming. And I'm going to read it. John 6, verses 1 through 10. Sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is the Sea of Tiberias, and a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the signs he had performed by healing the sick. Then Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover festival was near. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. And don't get caught up there. Parents, have you ever kind of just gone to your kid and gone, hey, and pointed something out, or teachers would do the same thing? And it's not to trip them up. It's actually because since you're there and it's a safe environment, you want to give them this opportunity and see what they'll do with it. Because it's an opportunity to mentor and grow and disciple maybe your student, maybe your kid. So it's don't read that as though he's like, I know what you're going to do. That's not Jesus' heart for us. He was looking for a moment, an opportunity to mentor Philip, okay? So he asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, "It would take more than a half a year's wages to buy enough bread for each one to have a bite." Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. "Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. What do you have in your hand? You have talent. Well, Philip was looking what was in his hand, and he goes, "I have nothing." There is nothing in this hand, and whatever might possibly be in his hand was certainly not enough for 5,000 people. So he goes, "It would take a year's wages. How is that going to work?" He already had in his mind what needed to happen, and he had calculated it. He knew right off the bat there was no way they could cover the crowd this size. And by this time, they knew how big that crowd was. So when he looked at what was in his hand, he went, "Nope, that's not going to work. Look at all of these people." But what did Andrew say? "We have 5 loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will that go?" See, there's a difference there. Because Andrew started with something that was there, And even though it was small, and again, how far will that go? He also knew that it was not going to feed 5,000 people. And yet, he brought it up and said, well, how far would this go? It's amazing what Jesus can do with 5 loaves of fish and five loaves and these fish. Jesus, can you make something work with that? A spark of faith. When I was growing up, there was a woman, she was my Sunday school teacher, so I was, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5. Her name was Arlene Garvling. She had suffered a great deal of trauma when she was a baby at the hands of her doctor, as a matter of fact. And the result was she had eyesight issues. That was before they put sunglasses when you had to be in an incubator, and so her eyes were burned. And she ended up with epilepsy that was quite severe and a myriad of other things. She talked funny. She was hard to understand. She could not see well. She struggled to walk. She wasn't a very big woman, but she had a lot of challenges. She taught Sunday school, week in and week out. She was my Sunday school teacher. And what was interesting about her that I learned as I got older is, do you remember white pages that had everyone's name written in? So just a little bit of, just preface a little bit. There used to be this thing, it was called white pages. And anybody who was in a property, who had a property or had written down where they were living, it would have a name and a phone number. You could go in there if you knew their last name. You could look them up. You could give them a call on a landline, which is a phone that has a cord connected to a wall. I'm just bringing us together. I'm getting us all on the same page here. So in Phoenix, our white pages was about 5 inches thick. I don't know where you lived, but ours was a doozy. And so she would take this woman about 5 foot. She took this, and year after year, however long it took her, she opened to page one. She started with the first person, and she prayed for that person. And then she prayed for the next person. And then she prayed for the next person. Until she got through the entire book. So please understand, if you lived in Phoenix sometime, and this is just part of my life, 80s, 90s, and 2000s, I don't know when she started. She prayed for you. She prayed for your family. She prayed for the home that you were in. Your life was different because this woman prayed for you and prayed for me. For me, she would come over and she'd go, Carolyn, what? Do you see that little girl that came today? She's brand new. I don't think she knows anybody. Do you think she would like a friend? Do you think you could go say hi to her? I can do that. That sparked something in me. I don't know if you know this about me, but I notice people that are in the corner, that are off. I really try to be respectful if you're hiding. I'll give you some time. But a lot of my closest friends were on the brink or on the side that people didn't notice. Arlene started when I was very young, cultivating that in my heart and in my life. That was something that's in my hand. Not everybody notices people, and that's okay. I'm not going to be offended if you walk by me and don't say hi to me. That's fine. But me, God put in my heart to notice who's on the brink and who doesn't have anybody talking to them. And I try really hard to be gentle about it. I'm just kind of a big personality sometimes. So then later I have to apologize. But I do it because I think you matter. Arlene thought that every one of those newcomers mattered. And if Arlene thought they mattered, then I thought they mattered too. What we actually do is we look in our hand like Philip did and say, there's no way this could amount to anything. And then we go after all of these other things And we end up grumpy and exhausted and frustrated, and lots of times we give up. We wonder why we're not getting raises or advances, why the person next to us, it seems to come so easy to them, and they keep progressing, and we're just not. And some of that might have to do with some things we need to work on. I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about those things that might not just be where you're supposed to be. Where are you supposed to be? What is in your hand? We have things that we don't really get to say yes to. They're called responsibilities. So my boys, they have to take a shower every week. They have to take a minimum of 3, as a matter of fact. Okay? For your sake, for my sake, and for my lovely, the wonderful teachers that they see 5 days a week, they're going to take a shower, even though they don't always want to. And sometimes it ruins their night, and sometimes it ruins their morning. And yet, I'm going to make them take a shower. And everything else is going to stop until that shower takes place. Right? We all have responsibilities, and they're not really choices. We have to mop our floor. We have to fix the toilet. We have to mow the lawn. We have to get our car tags. Just a thought. We have things that are not really negotiable. They're not really choices, but we like to make them choices. We like to, maybe I could, maybe I just won't. No, those things are just called responsibility. They're not really a choice. You get to decide when you do them, but they have to get done. I'm talking about the things that you get to say yes to. Yep. Yes, I'll do that. That's what I'm talking about. And if you're wondering if what can be done with this, if Jesus can feed 5,000 people with some loaves and some fish, I can guarantee that he can do something with whatever is in your hand. No questions asked. There were buckets left over. It's not kind of, it's not barely. God's not the God of kind of, sort of, little bits. He is the God of abundance, and he has abundance for you for what he has put in your hand, but we have to say yes to what is in our hands. So friends, what is in your hands? And what are you willing to do with it? Jesus, in his hand, had our salvation. Every last one of us. He actually had his divinity in his hand. And in Philippians, it tells us that it's essentially that he set it aside to experience life how we experience it. At any point, he could have picked it up. But he kept us in his hands. He wanted us to be free from our sin. He wanted us to be free from our pain, our difficulties, the things that trip us up over and over and over again. He wanted to give us life and life to the fullest. At the end of our life, we're going to come face to face with the reality of how we spend our time. Whether it's in an instant or we have some time to think about it, we're going to have some time to look over and see what we did with the things that we can say yes to. What if we stopped comparing mine to yours and yours to theirs, theirs to mine? What if we stopped comparing and started planning? What if we took a look at where our priorities are at right now? What if we decided to make a change? How might your life change? You might just step into the things that you are good at. And if you think for a moment that what I can do is not important, let me tell you, when my family moved here 10 years ago, and we didn't know the terrain, and we didn't know the culture here, and we didn't know where anything was at all, it took the people in my life that I met to teach me what plants to plant in my garden, like Miss LaVon did. And it taught me what doctors I should go to. I was going to have a baby soon, where I should go. And it took Miranda helping me figure that out. And it took so many others to know what resources were available here because I didn't know any of them. And those things matter to me. I actually have some stuff that's growing in the front of my house. That's not because of my own ability. That's because people like Miss LaVon helped me. She helped. I said, "What's that tree?" And she'd tell me. "What's that plant?" And she'd tell me. That matters. That matters to me, and that matters to other people. How might you impact those around you? How might you might start making disciples of those around you? And if you are followers of Christ, how might that impact the kingdom forever? Because you said yes, because you opened the white pages and started praying. That matters. Because you talk to a little girl and you tell her, "Does that girl, do you think she needs a friend?" So how do you begin? How do we get on a mission? A mission is a specific task with which a person or a group is charged. So how do you begin? You begin with a plan. Author and coach Dan Miller says that a good mission statement, or like a personal mission statement, should include three things. It should include your skills and abilities, should include your personality traits, and it should include your values, your dreams, your passions. You can put those things together, and you can start looking at what your mission is, what your calling is. Sometimes in the church we call it, "What is God's will for my life?" This is what we're talking about here. If you're before we move forward, sometimes we got to take a little look and see where our life is at. So this morning during response time, we've had communion. We're going to have some music. We're going to ask you to stand in a moment. But maybe during the response time, you want to start this here, because if you don't do it now, maybe you won't do it. You'll just take an inventory of where you spend your time. What do you do daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, or seasonally, and annually? Be honest. Find out where you're spending your time. Maybe you'll bring this back every week as we continue in this series, and you'll kind of look and compare where you're spending your time to maybe where you want to start spending your time. And then beyond that, you have a big sheet if you'd like to take that and really get more specific and put together a personal mission statement. Maybe, just maybe, you will find your life a little bit more fulfilled. Joy exuding out of you. It affects the people around you. At the beginning of today, we listened to a song by Toby Mac. He has been making music for quality music for 30 years. He started in the 80s. He has won multiple Dove Awards, and he's won 3 Grammys. And those Grammys have been throughout those 30 years. They weren't just at the beginning. They weren't just recently in the 2000s. It's over a span of time. Do you know it takes work to continue to be successful through all of that? Because in music, the standards change. It's a risky business. Times change, he gets older. There's all kinds of things that happen in those 30 years, and yet over those 30 years, he has been able to write songs that he is passionate about, and he's actually brought along quite a few other young musicians, including his son, including Jamie Grace. Torrin Wells has been on there as well. A myriad of people have been. Because he was willing to keep after it. Live out our passions and dreams today won't look the same over the course of our life, but when we know what those are, what we have in hand, then as our life continues and as it moves and grows, we can still live in that place using what's in our hand to bless those around us. In his song, Toby Mac is 54 years old. In his song at the very end, it says, "I can't stop, I can't quit. It's in my heart, it's on my lips. I can't stop, I can't quit. I'm all in." We have one life to live, folks. I don't know about you, but I want to be all in. And I want to figure out what I'm good at, and I want to do it to the best of my ability. And I want to take as many people as I can with me along the journey.